Blog Talk Radio.
Heard of it.
Well, welcome to Fire Talk Production. Today's guests are Stephen Newcomb, co-founder and co-director of the Indigenous Law Institute and the author of Pagans in the Promised Land, Decoding the Doctrine of Christian Discovery. And also joining us is Alex Whiteplume, the traditional Lakota from the Pine Ridge Reservation, located in South Dakota. And he starred in a documentary entitled Standing Silent Nation. My name is Mindy Nettesy, and I'm here with host Nell Cole, and we are here to talk about the Doctrine of Christian Discovery. Welcome to the show, Stephen and Alex.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome, all of you, and Mindy, thank you so much for the introduction and joining me on the show. I love having you as a co-host. What we'd like to do is start with you, Steve, and have you just tell us about your book and the Doctrine of Discovery, and take us from there, and we'll just follow you.
Well, the basic understanding of the Doctrine of Discovery that people ought to have is that it's based upon an idea going back to the 15th century that the first Christian people to locate lands inhabited by unbaptized peoples, meaning non-Christians, those Christian people have the right, supposedly, to take over all the lands and resources and assume a dominating authority over the existence of the originally free and independent nations and peoples of this North American continent and anywhere else that they locate those non-Christians anywhere in the world. And it's traced back to a number of Vatican documents issued in the 15th century and some even before then, which expressed many of these ideas. For example, the papal bull Dum Diversus, issued in 1452 by Pope Nicholas V to King Alfonso of Portugal, said that King Alfonso was authorized to go to non-Christian lands and to invade, capture, vanquish, and subdue all Saracens, pagans, and other enemies of Christ, to reduce their persons to perpetual slavery and to take away all their possessions and property. And when you examine those different terms, such as invade, capture, vanquish, subdue, and so forth, reduce to perpetual slavery, what you notice, at least what I've noticed after several decades of investigating all this, is that each and every one of those words is referencing domination. And it's also referencing dehumanization of those non-Christian peoples. And so that's really how I understand the Doctrine of Christian Discovery. I call it the Doctrine of Christian Discovery and Domination at this point. And that it's really has a dual aspect to it, which is domination, dehumanization, as I mentioned. Now, we could trace all that kind of language through many of those Vatican documents and also to the Old Testament of the Bible, which is where it's mainly derived from, the idea that the chosen people, so-called, have the right to take over the lands promised to them by the deity in the Old Testament. It traces back to that, but also this as I mentioned, those Vatican documents. There's a curious sentence or part of a long sentence in one of the papal bulls from 1493 that reads, sub dominio actuali temporali aliquorum dominorum Christianorum constitute non sint. And it refers to lands not under the domination of any Christian dominator. Dominorum Christianorum means Christian dominator. And the dominium of a Christian dominator is the domination. And so what this ultimately traces through to, though, is to the United States federal Indian law and policy system and to a specific U.S. Supreme Court decision from 1823 called Johnson versus McIntosh. And it had to do with a title dispute between non-Indian litigants. It was actually a feigned and fraudulent case, but that's going beyond the scope of what we need to discuss. But the Supreme Court took the opportunity of its decision in that case to go back through nine specific charters from England that made the distinction between Christians and so-called heathens or non-Christians, and looked back at the idea that Christian people, a direct quote from the Supreme Court, had the right, or assumed rather, the right to assert the ultimate dominion, another quote from the Supreme Court, to be in themselves, and exercised as a consequence of that assertion of ultimate dominion a right to grant the soil while it was yet in the possession of the natives, to use more language of the court. So what that's saying is that even though originally free and independent nations and peoples are existing there, but there's a way in which the powers that be are using these systems of concepts to assert the right to grant away other people's lands and properties and resources based upon these Old Testament ideas in the Bible. So when you look at this overall picture that emerges, what you see is that there is no separation of church and state when it comes to the United States federal Indian law and policy. And so I guess the question, part of the question becomes, there's many questions that emerge from this picture, but one of the questions that I have is how do we then come to terms with the domination and dehumanization built into U.S. anti-Indian law and policy. I call it anti-Indian law because we need to sharpen our focus on the ways in which it has been so destructive and detrimental to indigenous nations and peoples, and attempting to say that Indian nations and peoples no longer have a right to be free and independent of domination and dehumanization because of Christian discovery. So I guess in a pretty concise illustration or explanation, that's how I would describe the doctrine of Christian discovery and domination.
Wow. Alex, when you hear all that, what do you think about it?
Well, here I live in with Americans, and what I know about Americans are they're basically God-fearing Christian capitalists, and nothing stands in the way of making a profit. And it got this way by one is that not talking about it, two, just don't report it, and three, don't talk about it, and if you do, just lie about it. That's the American way.
Yeah.
As Lakota people, we've only had contact for 205 years this year. That's when we first met Lewis and Clark.
Wow.
But our resistance to oppression has been 500 years, and we always protested the history of Americans, and I always remember AIM played a big part of this. Indigenous people, we always protested. We'd done everything, and we had armed conflicts, marching in the streets, literature. Some people wrote about our awful history and through music. And AIM was a big part of this. At first, they were designed to defend urban Indians, but then they came to the reservation, and everything changed after they came. And we all remember Alcatraz in 1969, the tribal people offered $24 back to return that. And in 73, we had the occupation here at Wounded Knee. And in 1990, I remember up there in Quebec, Oka, where the Mohawk Warrior Society didn't want them to build a golf course on their sacred site.
Right.
In 95, there was Gustafson Lake, where our Sundance camp was attacked by military helicopters. And in 2006, the Six Nations set up camp in Cardonia, where they were attacked by police and white power, I guess. In 2006, all the Indian people, we've always protested our history, and everything that Steve said is the root of all the evil, is that doctrine of discovery. Because of that federal Indian law, we're not separated from church and state like the American law. And the Lakota, what we came up with is we read the U.S. Constitution. If we read Article 2, Section B of the Constitution, it says Indian people are excluded from all form of taxation because they're sovereign nations. That's exactly how it's written. And then we look at Article 6 of the United States Constitution, and that one just says treaties are supreme law of the land. So every day the United States president gets up and goes to work, it's another day of genocide. It's continuing genocide. It has not stopped since 1823, like Steve just mentioned.
Wow. Mindy, what did you think when you were hearing all that?
I'm particularly fascinated by how deep and long this history is, all the way back, of course, to the 1400s.
Right.
And I suppose one of my first thoughts is, I know, Stephen, you've had the opportunity to speak before the UN. What was that experience like, and did you get any formal response from the UN when you brought, sort of officially brought to their attention your thoughts about the doctrine of Christian discovery and sort of made an official plea to end this continuing disregard for basic human rights, not to mention formal treaties?
Well, certainly I did deliver the North American Indigenous Caucus statement, but, you know, there were a lot of other people there as well, such as Tanya Ganella Frischner, Faith Keeper of the Onondaga Nation, Orin Lyons, Chief Orin Lyons, Robert Miller, Robert Williams. There were many, many people that were there delivering from all over the world statements condemning the doctrine of Christian discovery and the domination and dehumanization that goes with it. The response, the formal response from the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, which is a UN body made up of indigenous representatives appointed by state and also by state representatives, that response was rather weak in my opinion, because it was talking about something they call reconciliation.
Right.
And when you talk about reconciliation, well, reconcile yourself to what?
Right.
If you're going to reconcile yourself to that what's already existing, then there's no reform, no change, no fundamental way in which they're going to work to end this this destructive and genocidal system that we're talking about, the history of which goes back so many centuries and much, much further in time than most people would imagine. But we've been working on this. I mean, my friend and colleague Virgil Kilstraight, who's from the Oglala Lakota Nation, a friend of Alex's, and Virgil and I began this effort in 1992 when we started the Indigenous Law Institute, and Virgil took me under his wing, and we started traveling internationally to Italy and New Zealand and many parts of the world to publicize the existence of these old documents and what they specifically said and how they have negatively and destructively and genocidally impacted indigenous nations and peoples. And so it's been since 1992 until this time, all these years later, that it's taken it that long, and the efforts of a lot of people to get it to the world stage. Alex played a part in that because he actually made an intervention about the doctrine of Christian discovery, what, back around 2004, Alex, or?
Yeah,
2004,
yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
And so go ahead.
No, well, the reason we did that was the Doctrine of Discovery brought federal law, and it diminished our sovereignty, and they done us to take our land. And it was just amazing that the doctrine is still used today. And what they use that doctrine for is to justify 3 decades of discovery claim. And so the legal principle that they use to justify this is religious superiority. And federal Indian law is not really recognized in any other state except United States. And so that comes from the Doctrine of Discovery. So what Steve said really hits true to me. There's no separation of church and state when it comes to indigenous people.
Absolutely.
And I would differ.
Go ahead.
I was going to say I would just slightly describe it a bit differently than the way Alex expressed it on the business about sovereignty, because oftentimes we give them too much credit by saying they actually right. diminish their sovereignty. But what they're doing is they're creating perceptions that the sovereignty has been diminished.
Exactly.
But if these are inherent rights within our existence right. as peoples, uh-huh. as peoples going back to the beginning of time, then all they can do is pretend that our sovereignty has been diminished based upon all the use of concepts and meanings and deceptions that they're creating. So, they're purporting to diminish it, yeah.
Yeah, I think they purport it, and then the colonization process and the boarding schools, they beat the culture out of us. So we tend to believe the colonization portion rather than our superior inherent right. And
yeah.
so today, things are changing. Today we're pulling out of that deep, colonization process, and we're actually decolonizing ourselves. And one of the reasons we pulled the Bigfoot ride together was we realized we were like zombies just existing. We were afraid to say anything to the non-Indian world because they attack us so hard. And I remember in the 60s, they were just killing us here on the state of South Dakota. Racism was really bad. And so when AIM came around in 73, it sort of opened our minds. It freed our minds from this, this jail that we were living in. So we rode on that ride, and I rode 18 years with my brother Virgil. We, him and my little brother Percy, we were the ones that were the core of this whole ride. But we brought that back to deal with our grief. And once we deal with our grief, we become stronger people. And so today, after 18 years of ride, I know what I want. I want justice, and I'm no longer a colonized American. So when we talk today, we have a standing that our other people don't have, and a lot of them are just amazed. And I work for the Black Hills Treaty Council today. I'm their EAPAHA. And one of the things that we realized was we have to decolonize our people. How do we get out of this paralysis, this box that we're in our thought, so we can be true sovereign, inherent? Nobody could give us sovereignty. That's our own. We have to build up to it. So the Catholic Church is awful. In the treaty, there was supposed to only be 3 churches on each reservation here on Pine Ridge. And here we have 56. And there's supposed to be 1 Catholic, 1 Episcopal, 1 Protestant. Somehow there's 22 Catholic churches and Protestant churches and all kinds of different religions we don't even know about. So anyway, I agree with Steve, but it was the colonization of our mind that put us into this paralysis of thought that we can't be free, that this really was detrimental to us. And it's all done by the Catholic Church.
Steve, one of the things you talked about is separation of church and state. And if this has power within our laws, then none of us have separation of church and state. And it's not even possible to do so unless we overturn this basic premise that they have some rights above normal American citizens or indigenous people.
Well, yeah, when I use the word peoples, I make sure there's an S on the end of it if I'm talking about distinct nations and peoples. That's really key. And I really appreciate what Alex just said about the decolonization of the mind.
Absolutely.
I call that healing the mind. And
right.
and the best way to think outside the box is to realize it's not even a box. It's only an idea about a box. And
right.
And that we're always working within the constraints of these different ideas that have been put forward that are part of this English language we're now speaking, 65% of which is Latin, the language of the Roman Empire. So it traps us in ways, or appears to trap us in ways that we don't even notice oftentimes. So that's why it's so critically important to wake up inside the language by seeing the inner meanings that are buried in the words. For example, if you take the word mortgage, it's actually two Latin words put together, mort for death and gauge for grip. So it's a death grip. So if we said, hey, I got to pay my death grip this month. I got to pay my death grip this month, but I don't know where I'm going to get the money. It's pretty accurate as far as what it's talking about. Another one is America. Ame is a command, love, and rica is riches and wealth. So when they talk about the American dream, it's the dream of riches and wealth. It's the way of life, the American way of life. It's the life of riches and wealth. Well, how do you get that those riches and wealth? By exploiting indigenous right. nations and peoples and taking over and assuming control of their lands, territories, and resources for the enrichment of the larger society. And as regarding your point about the no separation of church and state for anyone, some people might disagree with that, but I think your point is very well taken. But the thing is that what we do know, or at least I know now after looking at it for quite a while, is that domination is a fundamental American value,
right.
and we don't notice
right.
it as such. And so if the domination is actually a fundamental value to the system, government system, the word government in Latin, by the word, is domination, which is domination. That's the actual Latin word for government.
Wow.
And so the thing is that the domination then is no longer just on the indigenous peoples, but on everyone. So now
right.
you look and you see that Congress passed the National Defense Authorization Act. Supposedly, it's only about going after terrorists, quote unquote. But if it's anybody, you know, they can actually manipulate that, where any U.S. citizen or legal resident within the United States or even out of the United States, anywhere in the world, can be indefinitely detained
right.
until the end of hostilities. And when you think about the end of hostilities in a time of endless war, that might mean that they can throw away the key forever. So when that domination is now directed toward the average American person, and they start to see that everywhere, perhaps people will begin to see that, hey, by the way, we're all in this together, and
right.
we all have a stake in, you know, a reason to contest that domination dehumanization system.
Absolutely. Because if they can come for one person, then they can come for all of us.
Exactly. And I corrected myself there because I said we all have a stake, but then I remembered that's mining terminology, to stake your claim. So
it must be hard for you to even get a sentence out sometimes, knowing the real meaning of stuff. You're like, no, here's what I really want to say.
Yeah, it's challenging.
Well, now you call that the secret language of the empire. Is that correct?
Exactly. And the thing that you saw that on a YouTube video, I guess. But
yes, I did.
The thing is that, well, that's why the indigenous languages are so critically important. The United States engaged and the church is engaged in what's called linguicide, the intentional
mm-hmm.
killing
mm-hmm.
of indigenous languages. And
mm-hmm.
so they went all after all of our languages because they didn't want those ideas that were outside of their system to be able to compete with their monopoly, their monopolistic form of reality.
Wow.
So that's why it's so critically important to understand, for example, the seven laws within the Oglala Lakota language, because they give a different basis for a whole way of reality that's based on respect and honor for all living things and many other values that are so critically important. And I'm sure Alex could talk on a lot of those things like Virgil does.
Uh-huh. Yeah, one of the things that's really sad in today's day and age where everybody's civilized and they use computers and everybody's real intelligent is that the current Indian policy of domestication, assimilation, and colonization, there's absolutely no change. And this manipulation still continues, and it's causing causing racism because people are living on unceded Indian territory and people are coming back to their cultures. One of the things we found is the ones that had 500 years of contact are just absolutely no more, 400 years, 300 years. In 250 years, there's a little bit of their ceremony still there, little bits of their language. But the Lakota were still real because we've only had 204 years of contact this year. And we're coming out of that isolation of our minds, and we're starting to share our songs, our sacred rituals. And so they're coming out above ground, and we're getting back to our normal selves, but we're also being attacked by every individual indigenous person around the world. They want to use our ways because our ways have survived. And the way it survived was my grandpa took it underground. And it just, 1985 was when the Bigfoot Memorial Ride started. We rode for 4 years, and in our fifth year, we told the world, hey, we're still here. Our language is live. We still have our culture through our language. And so today, this world court effort that we're doing, it, the only way it can survive is it has to be supported by our grandfathers that still speak Lakota. The sovereignty is still in our language. And the American Christian religion does not belong here, especially on the plains. That should go back to Rome where it came from. And it doesn't match living on the land or on the Black Hills, the sacred area. And so we keep telling them that, but now we're getting so much people coming here to worship our ways, we're kind of in a, I guess we have a problem with that. And the problem is, what do? We've got too many outsiders doing our ceremonies. You go to Arizona, and the elders there, they don't want the Sundance ways because they have their culture still alive. They've only had a couple hundred years of contact. But you go anywhere else, and it just... And a lot of them, they don't even know how to speak our language, but they're performing our ceremonies, which are a waste of time. So we're trying to educate people on that. But one of the things I want to ask Steve is, how do we invalidate this doctrine of discovery? Is it through human rights violation, crimes against humanity, or is it crimes against the environment? How do we invalidate that doctrine of discovery? Because it's all based on false pretenses.
I would say it's a violation of our original laws already existing here when they showed up. Because all the time when we're talking about human rights and all the rest of it, that's their system. So we're always referencing everything back to their system, but we need to start to reference things back to our original systems. And those, for example, the seven laws of the honor and respect and compassion and pity and sharing and caring and humbleness and humility and bravery and courage and seeking wisdom and seeking understanding and patience and fortitude, where those are actually laws. So then the Anishinaabe, they express it as kindness and love too. And so one of the highest values for the Anishinaabe man is kindness and love. And you, that's not considered to be a value for a man in the typical American society. How, you know, if you evaluated your leaders on how kind they are, it's a whole different standard of evaluation than how dominant they are. How powerful can they be to dominate people around the world to let them know that America is number one? That's a whole different kind of idea than how kind can look at how kind that person is, you know, how compassionate that person is, and so forth. So I think that it's based on our own original norms and standards that were already existing here and continue to exist here that we have to delegitimize or show that their system has no legitimacy in terms of their domination and dehumanization.
Right. That's true, Steve. One of the things that the Black Hills Tree Council has been doing for the last 7 years is building allies. And in Lakota, we have a word for that. It's called hunka. It's more like adopting them and pull them into the Lakota nation. And that's how we kept peace and we kept order, was through hunka. And there's over 30 bands that were hunka to the Lakota nations. The Pawnee were one of them. The Mandan, Arikara, Hidatsa were one of them. The Northern Cheyenne, the Shoshone, the Arapaho. But over the years, the colonization really took its effect. So now we have the Northern Cheyenne living on their reservation, and they're all mighty within their reservation. So they stand up and say, we're the mighty Northern Cheyenne Nation, when they should say, we're the mighty Northern Cheyenne Lakota Nation, or the Hidatsa. I'm a Hidatsa Lakota Nation. So they forgot the ancient ties, so we're in the process of re-educating them there so we can keep those natural connections, those natural allyships. So, but the colonization just thoroughly done our people wrong, so we have that to deal with. So we have an uphill ladder we're climbing daily, and next week we're going to go up to Fort Peck Reservation. We're going to bring back these old ties. Half of Fort Peck is Assiniboine, and the other one's called Lakota, their Sioux. But what you said was, I'm an interpreter of words, and I always interpret the word Lakota. And La is the word for love and compassion. And Ko means to include everybody. And Ta makes reference to the ancient ways. So we love our people together towards the ancient ways. That's how I interpret it. So we're not bloodthirsty savages like John Wayne used to push us out to be, but we're our warriors lived in their camps with their wife and their children, and they expressed love on a daily basis. So how can they consider us as this bloodthirsty savage? I always tell my wife, I said, yeah, I'm a savage after 9 p.m., but that's a different story.
Yeah, we're actually the one that's the bloodthirsty ones.
Yes.
That's such an important point you're making, Alex, about the bloodthirsty savage, because, see, that's part of that dehumanization. You know, to portray, so, like, in other words, they take ideas out of their own minds, they imaginatively project those, they project their ideas onto our peoples, and then they use those projections to condemn us and treat us wrongfully based upon what came out of their minds, you know. It's a tried and true method.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's a tried and true method. And what you said about the Lakota and how that breaks down and reveals a whole a different understanding, that's the kind of insight that when we do that, that provides them with alternative models, not so they run around and start doing ceremony. They don't need to do that. But if they were just to follow those values, the true values of this land, then things could be different, because everyone would be looking at how to optimize the beauty and the beauty and the abundance of life and of entered the life force, rather than how can we destroy it to make money and profit. You know?
Yes. I had a group of college students here just last week, and they asked me that. And so what I told them was that the white culture is a new culture. It's only 500 years old, and their language is a made-up language. In Lakota, our words are interpreted to have meanings, but the English language, it doesn't have no meaning. And then they refer back to that Bible because they're so good Christians. And those words, if you look at the words written on any paper, those words are not living. They're dead written language.
Right.
100 years ago from now, you could look at that same paper and it's not going to change. It's going to be in the exact same way. But the Lakota, we're not like that. We adjust to Mother Earth's scheme. And about every 20, 25 years, there's a major shift someplace on Earth. And when that happens, our spiritual people, they go out and they start meditating, they humblecha, and they try to find out what Mother Earth's scheme is so we can adapt to Mother Earth. But the ones who have this written, everything written, they're stuck in that period of time. They will not progress beyond that in their personal thoughts or feelings. So today, I estimate the Lakota people, all indigenous people that still speak their language, they're about 2,000 years ahead of all the non-Indians that practice this capitalist way. So we're actually not a bloodthirsty savage, but we're far more superior living with Mother Earth than they are. But they just don't want to give us any recognition because we're oral tradition. We don't want to write our language down. We don't want to write our ways down. Or we're going to become stuck in that era, and we don't want that. We continuously adjust to Mother Earth. That's our motto in life. So I just wanted to throw that out there, too. We're a little bit different.
Something that has come up to me listening to you guys, I know there are a lot of people who, of course, feel alienated by the values of the Euro-American culture, even as they are a part of it. And I'm wondering,
mentality.
As you...
Yeah.
Yeah, as you seek to build allies, of course, for your cause and educate about your history and culture and combat the dominant, you know, the history of the dominating culture that as they've taught it. Do you also, how do you sort of deal with, I guess, I can't think of any other way to put it than those who sort of then go the opposite direction and sort of fetishize your cultures in ways.
Romanticize them, and, yeah.
Yeah, in the same way that they, you know, I know certainly in California, where I lived for a long time, there was many groups of people who built, you know, there's a place called the Ojai Foundation, a few other places where they've preserved some land that was on reservations and conduct sweat lodges and that sort of thing. And there was not a single person there that wasn't white. I just wondered if that's something that that continues to be an issue, and how you sort of balance building allies and educating about your culture while at the same time preserving, I guess, the integrity of the ways that you've worked so hard to preserve throughout the generations.
Yeah, one of the things, I guess, if you don't mind, Steve, I'll jump in on this. Our ancestors have always taught us, and I've heard through their stories personally, that we have to move with the stars, and especially in ceremonies, when the stars get at a certain formation, we have to do a certain ritual in order to live on Mother Earth. And all our teachings is in reference to living close to the buffalo in the spirit world. So the buffalo is our main, ally. We have the same blood as the buffalo. So we always want to adjust to how the stars move and how the Earth moves, and they almost wiped out the Lakota people in 1875 when they first declared their independence. And don't take that date for a grain of salt, because my wife says I get them all wrong. At that time, the census was from over 35, 40 million people to 250,000 was all of us that was left here. And so what happened was we are fighting to regain how it used to be, but we're having difficulty time with our own people through the colonization. But we want to move with the Mother Earth. We call it Wachante Wagmuka Oyanke, or we are shift with Mother Earth and all of her motion. And in our origin stories, it tells us that the Earth that we're here on today, it would belong to the female. It says there's nothing but women here. And as a male, we came in from another planet. And that's how, when the moon hit the earth and made a big old hole, that's where the ocean is today. When the moon came to existence, it was during this time that we came here to help the women. That's why the Lakota people, all the indigenous people, are matriarchal, because we come to the female's home. It's her house. Mm-hmm. So we have to conduct ourselves accordingly. So as matriarchal, if a man ever struck a woman, it was instant death. No trial, no appeal, no nothing. You have no discipline. You hurt this woman on her planet. And so when the earth is in motion, that's the description of the woman. Wea means the motion of earth as it shifts. So as long as the earth is in motion, the female will never become extinct. But as men, they could throw us away and we could become extinct. We're facing real danger today. And I tell all the people, our own Lakota people, some of them are spouse abusers, don't do that to that woman. We got to treat them nice because they might throw us away. And this is how Lakota people live. And today, with the colonization, it's terrible. About half of our Lakota people are colonized really bad. They'll never come back. So as Lakota people, we still maintain our language. We're moving away from that setting to go back towards our ways. And we always leave the door open for them to come back and join us. And let's go back towards the kinship ways where everybody's related. And when you're related to somebody, you'll never hit them. You'll never kill them. And because that's taboo. And so we want to go back to those ways. Today on the Pine Ridge Reservation, we have too many cops, we have too many judges, we have too many jails. Mm. And that does never do us any good. In American concept, if you go in there and you serve time and you pay for that crime, so you come out free to do it again. But Lakota, you never have a second chance. So we have a real high standard on how, a high moral standard that was natural to everybody. We followed those rules, and so we got along in a peaceful way and lived on Mother Earth the way she wanted us to live.
Yeah.
Well, I know, Mindy, in answer to your question, I spent the past 5 years kind of learning, and each time I think I know something, it gets deeper and deeper, and it's like an endless amount of pain and suffering that we've caused these people. But it's also been
Absolutely.
The most difficult thing that I've ever had to learn because of the colonization and the residential schools and all. It's extremely difficult to learn it and not get attacked by both sides, because
right.
there's been so many people come that are bringing them sure. harm wrapped in love, that they don't know who to trust as far as the white people whatsoever.
Right.
And so mm-hmm. you do get attacked by both sides. So if you're going to come and help, you have to understand that it's one of the most complex things that you'll do, but it's also one of the most rewarding, because sometimes you end up in a conversation just like this.
Right.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
But
well,
it is difficult, believe me.
Yeah, I'm so
you know, it's
thankful for Steve for doing all that research. He's our expert. We recognize him as
yeah.
our expert on the Bible and the doctrine of discovery. That's just a farce. To us, it was an invasion. It wasn't a discovery.
That's all it was.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in his book, he talked about the fact that just the mere concept of knowing something exists gave them rights to it completely, no matter what was happening in that place, was irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, Steve, I wanted to ask you. Now, as they begin to Christianize the children, they baptized them. So part of the land thing you said was unbaptized Christians. But what happens when they begin to Christianize the indigenous people and baptize them? Does the law still...
No, because see, that's where the trap is. It's all designed very, very brilliantly, because when you are not baptized, you have no existence that they have to respect. They call that terra nullus, N-U-L-L-U-S, meaning lands inhabited by heathens, pagans, infidels, or unbaptized persons.
Right.
The only way you can have an existence that they will acknowledge is by becoming baptized. And originally, when you became baptized under the Catholic system, as an example, you were considered to come under the jurisdiction of the Pope in Rome, no matter where you were in the world. So you're no longer considered to be free and independent, because you're under the jurisdiction spiritually of the Pope. And so the idea is to negate... To cancel out and negate the original free existence of the people. And as soon as the Christians show up to a shore and they plant their royal standard, then they come with the Bible and the cross and all that, then they consider that to be what's called doomsday. Doomsday, which is the day of judgment, the day of Christian judgment on the non-Christians already existing there. And
wow.
So these are all presumptions that they use. So the royal standard is both a flag, but it's also, we're talking about the standard of judgment they are now going to impose in a dominating fashion on the free and independent peoples existing there. That's why it's so important for us to acknowledge our original free and independent existence, which our ancestors experienced for thousands and thousands of years, or in oral history going back to the beginning of time. And that we still have a right to that original free existence, free and independent of domination and dehumanization. And domination and dehumanization never become legitimate, no longer, no matter how long they have been exerted over a people. So that's why we have to use our own standards of judgment to say, no, when you come with your flag, or you wave your sword over the land, or you sprinkle your water, or you break a branch or two, or you dig up some soil, or tear off some grass and do your ceremony or your ritual to create sovereignty, all you did was engage in a bunch of superstitious nonsense,
right.
And you didn't accomplish anything. But we need to be able to understand how that system was put into place in order to be able to reject it and refute it, you know. And something my friend Virgil Kilstraight said that was so brilliant, he said one time, they cut you off from your heart, stick you in your head, and manipulate you out of a book. And if that isn't
right.
a perfect formula, I don't know what it is. It's pretty
right.
horrible. Yeah.
And it seems like these apologies that they do are the second piece to the doctrine of discovery, where they give you a check and then you sign away your right to ever complain as their final land payment. So in the end, that's how they get to do the land and legalize it, is through these checks that they give as they issue these false apologies.
We never accept no apology as Lakota people. The only time we could ever accept any form of apology from this government is if they get justice. We need justice. The largest, most efficient, effective termination of people happened here by Americans. Nowhere in the world has it been this bad. And they just hide it and they sweep it under the rug. And so we're bringing this out and we're working with people around the world today that are learning about us. One example was I met Evo Morales. He wanted to meet with me, so he actually flew me to the United Nations, and I only got to spend about a half hour with him, and he was just shocked when I told him, yeah, we defeated Custer, and he said, you know, we really apologize, Mr. White Plume. We thought you were just a figment of John Wayne movies. We didn't know you were real here. We thought this was always Americans, and so he apologized, and
wow.
he promised to help us
yeah.
any way he can. So I really appreciated him for that moment. So we got a good ally there is Bolivia, is Evo Morales.
But yet you always have to begin at square one.
Right.
We're still here.
Right, that's it.
And yet
well,
your fight is such a deeper one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that whole business about the apology, those two words that they use as manipulations, which one is apology and one is reconciliation.
Yes.
And the word reconciliation, when you actually look into it, it goes back to what they called the Holy Inquisition, which is really the unholy Inquisition. But it was the era of torture and murder of heretics. And one of the things that the heretic could do is renounce their errors and come back into the church to put themselves back into submission to the church. And so the word reconciliation is used to quell rebelliousness. And that's one of the, then the other one is apology. Oh, we apologize. We managed to rip you off for a whole continent. And, but gee, we're sorry. And then
right.
and nothing changes. It all is the same, you know? So uh-huh. like there's something that's called the Indian system that was existing in the mid 1800s, actually from the early 1800s all the way through the 1800s up into the 1900s. For all I know, it's still existing. And this Indian system was written about in a book called Lincoln and the Indians, which my friend Sheldon Wolfchild, who's a Dakota Indian living in
uh-huh.
Minnesota, he helped to get this reissued. And David Nichols, who wrote the book, he wrote the following about the Indian system. He said, the Indian system revolved around the efforts of rapacious white men to commandeer these treaty annuity monies. Again and again, tribes were moved to barren country where they could not sustain themselves, either by hunting or farming. That opened the monetary floodgates, creating a demand for contractors and traders to provide provisions with payment overseen by the Indian agent. The system featured every conceivable kind of financial corruption, kickbacks, inflated prices, false claims, and payments for goods and services never actually delivered. And then he continued, most of this money never trickled down to the natives. Starving Indians became commonplace in the West. Such starvation was precisely what touched off the Indian War in Minnesota in 1862. And so what I'm pointing out is that this was a way in which the monies that were supposed to go to Indian people for treaty payment never even reached them and were manipulated into the pockets of white people in a very, very slick manner. And
yeah.
there's one last example I'd like to give, which is that the Winnebagoes in Minnesota, even though they had not participated in the War of 1862, they were removed from Minnesota and moved over to the Dakota Territory. And so this is from Nichols' book also. There were 1,300 Indians, only 116 of whom were males 15 years or older. Camped around the Winnebagoes were nearly 600 white people. So that's 1,300 Indians and 600 white people camped around them or near them. And what were those white people doing there? Quote, they all live one way or another from the governmental appointments. So they were like vultures preying off the misery of the Winnebagoes. That's that Indian system was.
Yep. And that kind of is what Alex is describing by all those churches still on this reservation. They're all still getting their piece of the pie that they created.
That's true. One of the things, I think I got this quote from you, Steve, but I always use this when I go lecture at colleges or universities. And it, what it says is, when a religion becomes organized, it turns into a cult, and it harms rather than does good. And non-religions are far superior because we follow good qualities. And so our ceremonies, we never write none of it down. And so I look at the Catholic Church and all the other religions as cults. So they're harming us, they're harming people, but the people don't realize it. They think it's good, and that's where they go wrong.
Well, there's a marketing to the Christians of what they want to believe that they're doing. So there's a lie on both ends of the spectrum that Christians have no clue that this actual policies are taking place or that it's generating land theft. All these other pieces are kept from them. And they're given this bottled God that is a kind and loving God, and they believe they're coming to the reservations or coming to help, which I hear, I'm sure, Alex, you've seen that same story play out a million times, where they don't understand why you're so upset when they're just trying to help.
Yeah. I know. It's bad around here. They say racism. How do we stop racism? And so I was telling them, the only way is you got to bring honor back to your people by honoring the treaty. You gave your word. You pledged your honor to obey that.
Right.
So we took you at your value, word value, and 2 years later it didn't help us. It just, the slaughter continued. So I, today, I'd go someplace, any place on South Dakota. I stopped, and if I see wild turnips going, I'll get out of my car and go pick some. Or sometimes if I get hungry, I'll just pull over to a choke cherry bunches and I'll eat a little bit. And here comes this white rancher. You know, he'll point a gun at me, get off my land. And I said, no, this is treaty land, and I'm just having some berries. But they'll point guns at us and make us leave their land. And so is that racism or is that guilt for living a lie, that this land is unceded Indian territory, but they're living on it? So that is the root of racism, is the guilt from living on stolen land.
That's brilliant. You know, this this man who's a with the Unitarian Universalist Church, he created a resolution, and I had encouraged him to do this, to create a resolution that the church would honor the fact that the church is sitting on the territory of some Indian nation. So the traditional territory of that nation, the Illini Nation. And so he wrote up the whole resolution, and it was, in my opinion, it was really good, but I knew it was really tough. It was strong language. And, you know, all, like, a bunch of the people in his church didn't want it. They didn't want to acknowledge that their church was on the territory of an Indian nation. They said, well, you should put in there that it used to be the territory of that nation, at past tense. Because what if they come after the land? They might want it back. And so you're right, that guilt, you know, they know that the whole process is not legitimate. So that guilt sits with them at a very deep, deep psychic level.
Right.
It's like we know that we didn't personally steal it, but we know that we're standing on stolen land, but we don't know what to do now. What do you do? We're so deep into it. That, what are your choices?
Yeah, but nobody's even asking them to give any land, you know, like supposedly give land back or anything. Just honor the people of the original people of that place. They can't even bring themselves to do that.
No, because they've been lied to so deeply.
Because out of fear.
Yeah, well, you have to unbrainwash them first before they can even hear the fact that they're on stolen land. So that's where they work both sides of the people they control to the point where they're turned against each other. And nobody's looking at the person who has actually committed the crimes.
Right. I always look at school systems. I served 5 years in Berlin, Germany, when the Iron Curtain was up.
Yeah.
And in their school systems, I went and sat as a class just to learn about what they'd done to the Jewish people. And so it was taught in schools so that it can never happen again.
Right.
But Germany and Australia is doing that now. And they owned up to their genocide, and so they're becoming honorable people. I respect the Germans for doing that. But here in America, the lie continues. They won't even teach the American genocide in the school systems. Instead, they're teaching our children to be good middle-class male.
Yeah.
The curriculum's just awful.
Exactly. Well what I want to do before we get too deep in is I want to take a break, and then we'll come back and continue on, if that's okay with everybody.
Yep.
I guess it'll work. About how long till you come back?
It's about 5 minutes.
Okay.
All right, we'll be back.
Thank you.
Steve.
Yes.
Even in the initial stages of contact between European Christians and Native Indian people, the stage was set for ethnocentrism, and the attitude toward the Indians was that of Christian superiority. The Indians were read a proclamation in Spanish which they had no hope of understanding. They had no hope of understanding the death sentence they were being read, and it went something like this. We ask and require you to acknowledge the church as the ruler and superior of the whole world, and the high priest called Pope, and in his name the King of Spain as lords of this land. If you submit, we shall receive you in all love and charity, and shall leave you, your wives and children, and your lands free without servitude. But if you do not submit, we shall powerfully enter into your country, and shall make war against you. We shall take you and your wives and your children, and shall make slaves of them, and we shall take away your goods, and shall do you all the harm and damage we can. Long years ago, we were all tribal. Came the missionaries with the fucking Bible. 1492 began the termination. The Holocaust never in the end nation.
Thank you.
Avengers, a very powerful song. What I'd like to do, gentlemen, and Mindy as well, is try to figure out where we all go from here, because all of us come from a very different place. Now, what do we do knowing this truth? Where do we go from here? What is our fight? Stephen, you want to begin with that? Stephen, are you there? Oh, he may not be back yet. Alex, are you there?
Oh, yes, I am.
Okay. How can we help your people without causing more trouble when we come?
I think what is most important today is to become allies. We want to have allies with the Lakota Nation. We're proceeding through the United Nations, and one of the things that the United States did was they declared us as minorities. We're no different from the ethnic black and the Mexicans and the Asians and Chinese in America. So we're categorized as minorities when we have this treaty, so we have a special relationship. But somehow we're kicked down to the bottom level. So we're going to the United Nations, and we found a lot of colonization in the United Nations itself. But the Lakota people played a really important role in getting the United Nations to come down here and do a study on the treaty and other constructive agreements. And so today we're following through with the treaty study that Martinez did for the United Nations. And we just had another rapporteur come down here to listen to our complaints. And so we'd like to ask everyone to become allies, because we're proceeding towards the World Court to file genocide, ethnocide, ecocide against the United States for what they did to us as indigenous peoples. And so I'd like to have allies for that, because we're fighting for all treaties that were violated, because we have the strongest stand. Ours was passed by Congress, signed off by the President. We went through the Supreme Court system. We went to Congress twice. And so we exhausted all remedies, so we're proceeding through the United Nations. The doors weren't open to us there because we're classified as minorities. Well, we just had a three-year, a fight to get to be recognized as a nation. So Chief Red Cloud, when he goes to the United Nations, he's going there as a state, not an NGO.
Wow.
So we've accomplished that so far. So we'd like to ask all people, let's get rid of the guilt. Let's proceed to get justice done so there can be honor in America. Right now, we look at Americans as thieves and liars and land grab. That's how we look at them, and we don't trust them. And we don't like living that way either, but the American people don't like that as well. So a lot of people are realizing this, and they are coming our way to support us. So if there's any way you could become allies and support our cause, this is a spiritual move, and Chief Red Cloud is behind it, and the whole Oglala Band, as well as the Nine Sioux Reservations, made a consensus, and we are going to proceed to get justice. And we're looking for the 1851 treaty territory. We want to stop that and get that back before any more damage is done, because it seems like America, all they do is they want to move into our territory and destroy our sacred lands, our beautiful land. And today our water is not good. We're at 39 MCLs. That's the maximum contaminant levels. And what did we do here in the Midwest to get this? We didn't deserve this. We didn't do one thing to ruin our water. Here our water is being damaged by uranium miners and oil miners and frackers. And so we want to stop all that around the world. There should be no one digging up anything that's under the ground, because they were here millions of years ago and no one could live here. So finally we're at a point where we got it, so we can breathe good air, drink good water, and they're bringing everything back up on the earth the way it used to be at one time, and nobody could live here. So we want support for stopping all this mining. And I tried to grow hemp a few years ago to bring a new industry to the reservation. We could all been living well.
Yeah.
But the United States came and interfered with our sovereign ways. So I think that would be good. And so I just like to ask everybody to support us. We're making a major move, and it's going to support everybody around the world. So, and then now,
yes.
My phone is starting to static, and I got an old phone, so it's starting to die, so you might lose me here in a few minutes.
Well, then, before we go into the other piece, then, is there something that you were going to say at the end that you want to go ahead and say?
Yes, I just wanted to say to the people listening around the world that my grandfathers used to be real proud indigenous peoples. They lived here on this land. They lived here forever. And they were killed by smallpox. The smallpox wiped out about 15 million Lakota people here in this whole area. And all our ancient wisdom and knowledge was wiped out through that disease. That was the worst germ warfare anywhere in the world history. And so today we're rebuilding what we lost. And we do that through ceremonies and vision quest. And we brought back our way. We're still total. We're still well. We're still whole. And we have a chance on saving this earth. If we all come together to stop using fossil fuels today and nuclear energy, I think we'll have a chance to continue living 50 years from now. And so I just feel sad. And the boarding schools, a lot of my grandfathers and my father's generation, my mother's generation, never came home from these boarding schools.
Right.
And so we have this lingering loneliness towards them. We want to know what happened. But the Catholic Church and the government boarding schools don't want to cooperate with us by giving us this list because they know they committed the act of genocide and they do not want to get sued. I guess everything revolves to money for them. But to us, we want to feel and live natural again. And so we want to deal with that because when you have death that you never dealt with, it causes trauma in your mind. And the pain from that is awful to live with. And so we want to come out and be natural again. So we need support to the Lakota people for doing that. And I think our way is far superior than the American way. I think people could live way happier and live a real productive life. Live in the Lakota way rather than being a good capitalist. That capitalism is awful system. And if they feel that way, I'd like to offer them, go back to Rome. But I'm not going to buy you a plane ticket or a boat ticket, you know. So we need this support around the world, especially indigenous peoples and good people that want to just live here on this world without any guilt and live a natural life. Pure joy, pure happiness is what we're after today. We're not trying to demean everybody. History is history, but how do we change it? You know, that's for a better way. That's what we're all about. And we have laws that we've been passing for our nations. We have international strategies, and we're going that way, and we might need some financial support every now and then. I went to Blue Lake, California last February, and we called a national treaty meeting here in the United States. And there was 128 different nations that came, and they formed a consensus to support the Lakota on this fight to file genocide against the United States. And every day I speak about this, I'm violating the Homeland Security Law of the United States.
Really?
I do this as a matter of principle. And so I don't think they could come and take me and send me to Guantanamo and obey. But I just like to put out a call out there. We need allies. We need support in what we're doing.
Thank you so much.
Where can people go to support you? Is there a website or anything like that where people can go to learn more about and to read news and updates about your fight?
You go up on the Internet. It's called Oweaku International Justice Project. And Oweaku is Oweaku, International Justice Project. And that's our webpage.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen, are you there?
I am. I was on mute there for a minute.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure. All right. Alice, you going to hang on until your phone goes, or are you?
I'm trying to.
All right. So just hang in there, and then if you fall off, then we'll know what happened.
Okay.
Hi. So, Stephen, where do we go from here in your mind?
Well, one of the things that occurs to me is that old saying about doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result is a definition of insanity. It's also a definition of federal Indian law and policy. But another way of expressing that is to say using the same language over and over again and expecting a different result is also the same thing. And the problem is that we're stuck in a language that keeps replicating the same destructive, dominating, dehumanizing reality, and then we somehow wonder why things don't change. And there are a lot of very influential people and organizations that have a vested interest in making sure that things do continue in the manner that they are now, and regardless of how destructive that is. And so what I would like to encourage people to do, it doesn't sound all that practical, but in an educational sense, I think that it will be, and that's to look at society around you as you read news reports, as you just look at various things in your everyday lives, and look at the extent to which those things are actually reflecting either domination or dehumanization. And I think you'll be shocked to see that so much of the society, so much of the economy is actually implicated in that. And that when we use those two categories as a framework of analysis, it shows that there needs to be something very fundamentally different as far as a basis for a way of life. Otherwise, it's just going to continue to spiral out of control. And one of the things that provides models for alternatives is the indigenous knowledge and wisdom systems. And they're very simple. They sound so simple. Things like honor and respecting life rather than destroying life. You know, having compassion and pity and kindness for others and sharing. For example, those seven laws of the Lakota, such as Virgil has taught me about, or the seven laws of the Anishinaabe nation. And so to learn more about that, but try to put those into actual practical effect in our everyday lives. Those are just a few things that are of interest to me. One other thing, too, is that when you look at how many religious systems there are in the world, and let's just take Christianity as an example, is there something within Christianity that teaches people to condemn domination and dehumanization, to actually live their lives in a way that doesn't replicate that? And what I'm saying is the use of those specific words, I don't see that. And I think that until we correctly diagnose the nature of the problem, there's no way we're going to create an effective solution to those problems. And so those are just a few ideas. I mean, they don't sound very practical, I'm sure, but we have to remember that the reality systems that we're living are held together by ideas. And then unless we shift those ideas into something and other behavioral patterns, that it will just continue. And when you look at, for example, Fukushima and the radiation that the poor Japanese people are suffering from because of the nuclear industry and because of the way in which all those nuclear wastes are being stored with no real effective way of dealing with them, and yet they keep accumulating more and more and more, And now much of that has been released in Fukushima, many times worse than Chernobyl, and there's the prospect of a real horrendous worst-case scenario in reactor number 4. This is very dire, but this is the effect of domination. And you know, when you look at the waters, it used to be that our ancestors could kneel down at a stream or something and just pick that water up and drink it. There was no problem for your health. That was actually good for you. And now today, who would do that? No, I can't think of anyone in California that would just kneel down at a stream and pick up that water and start drinking it. You'd have to have your head examined, you know, because there's so much toxicity. In such a short period of time, we had pristine rivers for thousands of years,
And in such a short period of time, they've destroyed so much of what was pristine, the legacy of our ancestors, and they had no right to do that. So unless the basis of the society moves away from a love of riches and wealth, moves away from a central focus on greed and domination, then things will never be corrected. And I do believe we have collective rights, but we also have corrective rights. We have a right to correct the wrongs, and that goes for everyone. I mean, we're all suffering from this, not just indigenous nations and peoples.
Exactly.
But it's planetary, you know.
Well, I have a lot of Christians who say their God is a loving God. And then, of course, my argument then is you take back your Christian belief system because it's been dominated by a God that is far from loving. So if that's who your God is, then you fight your own churches and say this is not our doctrine, this is not the way we're going to behave throughout the world. And when you begin to do that, then you can talk to me about your God being a loving God. But until then, I'm going to have to say that I don't want you anywhere near any indigenous people with your missionary work. That to me, that's the most dangerous thing, to expose people with that kind of belief system to people who have no clue of how dangerous the person is that's bringing them food. So, it's such a hard fight because there's so many different mindsets that you're dealing with on both sides. So, you know, from the Christian the Christianized Indian to the missionary workers and all the people in between. It's so many different mindsets. I don't know how you battle that piece of it. Alex, are you still there?
Did we lose Alex?
I think we might have. Yeah, I wasn't sure. I was just checking. So what do you think, Stephen?
I had to plug in my phone to get it to keep charging.
Yeah.
Well, the thing, I mean, it's not my intention to bash Christians. I've never, you know, or, I mean, they're entitled to believe what they believe in. But the problem is, I was at a Anishinaabe spiritual gathering, Wisdom Keepers gathering, a few weeks ago up in Manitoba. And this Christian man came up and he said, there's nothing wrong with what you're doing here. He said this to the organizer, Dave Krishane. He said, there's nothing wrong with what you're doing here, but I think you need to have me tell these people that they need Jesus in their lives.
Yeah.
So Dave had his own ideas about that. But the thing that I said, you know, the problem for you is that you actually have the Old Testament narrative of the chosen people in the Promised Land attached to what you understand as Christianity.
Right.
And the New Testament came to fulfill the Old and not to reject it or overturn it. And the Old Testament begins with a command, which is dominate the earth. And that's actually a direct quote from a Jewish scholar, very eminent Jewish scholar. He translates Genesis 21:28 in that manner, dominate the earth. And so the thing is, then Psalms 2, verse 8, it states the Old Testament deity is saying to King David, ask of me, and I shall give to you the heathen for your inheritance and the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession. And when you take one people and give it to another people as an inheritance, that's a form of property. So you can't do that without that being a pattern of domination. When you say all the parts of the earth for thy possession, you could say, well, that's based upon what an understanding of the earth was at that time of King David. But let's say that you take that and move the time frame of that to the period of the what's called the era of discovery. Now your understanding of the uttermost parts of the earth, which you can travel to by ship, becomes the entire globe. And all you have to do is go to any parts of the earth for your possession, claim possession, and you are able to have those peoples that are already existing there as your inheritance based upon Psalms 2, verse 8.
these are the manipulative ways in which the Christian Bible has been used, and specifically the Old Testament has been used against indigenous nations and peoples. So what the Christian Europeans did, or the peoples of nations of Christendom did, is they envisioned themselves as being the new chosen people going to the uttermost parts of the earth, and all they had to do is locate some land of the heathens, and then they could go ahead and claim that as their own under Christian domination or Christian dominion. And
right.
And so this is the problem, is that mentality, it, even if they're no longer identifying it with the word Christian, they could identify it with the word European and say it's the right of the first Europeans to go to non-European lands, but the pattern is exactly the same, and it originated within a religious doctrine. So this is the kind of thing that needs to be challenged, and that seems to me like Christians can go ahead and repudiate that doctrine, say we do not subscribe to that, we do not believe that that is in keeping with our Christian faith, and
right.
then start working to undo it.
Yeah,
and I will actually be
Go ahead.
I will actually be addressing the Unitarian Universalist Church Wednesday night in Phoenix, Arizona, and I'll be giving a keynote address on this very theme. So,
because it's unusual. I mean, when I was reading your book, so many things came through my mind. But the "Thou shalt not kill" only applies to Christian on Christian murders. It does.
Yes.
Actually, in the Bible, you can kill non-Christians all you want, and actually, it instructs you to do so.
Yeah.
But
well,
you can't kill other Christians. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I think even within groups of Christian people, there's a hierarchy of humanity. I think nothing could be more obvious than the treatment of our current president of the United States, who is a Christian and doesn't pass muster with so many people within the Christian culture because he doesn't because he's not white and is still sort of cast as the other. So I don't know if fundamentally there's fundamentally a problem with the direct teachings of, say, Jesus Christ as literally understood, but that. Those who seek power and are ironically afraid of change, even though they're the ones that brought the change and destruction to this land, selectively decide what's true or untrue about their own doctrine. There doesn't seem to be a rational application of any of the teachings, and so their appeal to any kind of authority when it comes to the Bible is false, you know, and contains an enormous amount of hypocrisy. So in addition to there being, the religious undertones to domination, there's just this sort of undertone and undercurrent of racism and ethnocentrism is everywhere and continues to apply to our own relations with ourselves in this country and certainly around the world. So the Western imperialism didn't stop with the land here in the United States, but continued west to Vietnam and the Philippines. And now, of course, we see it in our wars with the Middle East and those people. So whenever it serves power to see someone and cast someone as the other, they'll often use Christian doctrine to justify that. But I don't know if that's particularly rooted in a literal understanding of the Christian doctrine or not. I don't know. And I definitely agree that if anything else, sort of battling the ignorance of people about what the many cultures of the different peoples, the indigenous peoples of the United States are. So they might even learn what alternative systems of government or economics even looks like. I think most people raised certainly in the public school system or the private school system in the United States believe there is actually no other alternative besides this capitalist system that surrounds us.
Yep.
Anyway.
Not very well put. What I want to do is we're going to start wrapping up the show. So Mindy, can you tell people how to find you again?
Oh, I can be found online very easily through my tongue-in-cheek website, thecultofmindy.com. as we were talking earlier about all religions being cults, I do sort of run my own tongue-in-cheek cult, but only because my last name is very difficult to spell. I can be found even if you probably just Google Mindy Poet feminazi,
cult.
I'm sure you'll find me. So, but I can be found, and you can read my writing and blogging at thecultofmindy.com.
All right, thank you so much. And Stephen, is there anything you want to say in wrapping up and how to get in touch with you? And
well, our website is Indigenous Law Institute. If you just type that in and hit enter, it'll go right to the link for it. And so I could be contacted through that website. And I wanted to thank you for having me on your program. I really appreciate it. And
thank you so much for coming on.
I hope that your listeners got something valuable from hearing our discussion. I guess I did want to end with one little story that the Vatican representative at the United Nations told me a couple of years ago. He said that he thought it was important that we as indigenous peoples not have a god that's tied to a specific place such as a mountain, because what if someday you want to move to Germany? And so he was encouraging me to have a portable god that could be transported in my suitcase. And so
okay.
I think that's very...
That's good to have.
Portable gods.
A portable god.
Something they'll figure out how to sell someday.
And a nice little kit.
Yeah. So there are a number of... funny things that happen in doing this work as far as the
abuse. Oh, I bet there is.
With,
I bet you've heard it
all.
Yeah,
and I'm sure when you're in the business of dominating other lands, it's incredibly important to have a portable god, because you yourself
really
are
is.
Not attached to any geography of your ancestors.
Yeah.
Yeah,
have God
exactly.
will travel. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Have God will travel.
Sage
all right,
advice.
Well, thank
Sage
you so
advice
much.
From the Vatican.
All right, thank you so much.
You.
Everybody have
okay.
a good night, and happy Father's Day to everyone.
Thank
Absolutely.
You.
And that's a wrap for Fire Talk Productions today. Join us next time.
Good night.